This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Thursday, Payne and Pendergast. Injuries with the Texans. This will be the big news. This will be the thing to watch today. Again, Nico Collins, Will Anderson did not practice yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday in his press conference on those two players.
Nico, he's doing good. We'll see where he ends up.
How about Will Anderson?
Same with him. He's doing well. We'll see where he ends up.
Okay, there's less info out there on Will than there is on Nico Collins. We've seen videos of Nico Collins working out where he's looked good. We'd seen reports of certain benchmarks he'd been hitting, Seth, in terms of miles per hour, you know, on the GPS. The latest tweet about Nico medically was from Aaron Wilson yesterday, saying that he has passed all tests for hamstring. No setbacks per league sources. Regain speed, mobility, ready to go. Matter of when, not if, he'll be designated to return. Team still determining if they're activating him for the Lions game. Before we dig into this, let's play one more clip here. This is from D'Amico Ryans in his coach's show earlier this week when he was asked by John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, like, how do you handle guys that are getting ready to come back from injury and it's 50-50 with them coming back? How do you handle injuries?
We're in a good spot. I mean, right now, halfway point of our season, you know, we're in a good spot. Oh, that's one of the toughest spots being a head coach, right? Of having to make that call of the guy's close, but we still don't know. For me, I'll always lean towards making sure a player long-term health is always at the forefront of my decision, as opposed to, come back a week too soon, and now we lose you for, call it 4 or 5 more weeks. Yep. So let's make sure, right, you can practice throughout the week, right? And let's make sure you can show your teammates and yourself you can gain that confidence. Oh, I can go out and perform my job to the highest level.
You have to tell them to sit down? Like, hey, you got to sit, and they want to play?
Sometimes throughout my conversation with them, I talk around. I let them make that decision.
Okay. So, Will Anderson and Nico Collins, is he having that conversation right now where they might be feeling good and they want to go, but he's just not quite trusting it?
He better be having the conversations. The nature of the, you know, like how close they are.
It could be as clear cut as like, no, you're definitely not going because like, okay, you're just that bad. So I don't know. We have zero clue whether Aaron Wilson reported that Nico Collins has been hitting his speeds and all that stuff and that he's been good, but he's still not practicing football.
Right.
So what does that mean? Does Nico Collins feel good to go, but D'Amico has to hold him back, or is it dicier than that?
Yeah, one day in, and we don't know. We don't know. You're right. We only see reports. I'm going to keep it to Nico for a second here because we don't know anything about Will. There's no reports on Will. The Nico thing, you know, my feeling was they put him on IR. My hope was they were putting him on IR as extreme caution. You know, like, hey, you know, just let's get you right. Let's get you well. You've dealt with injuries before. It's a long season. All those things. We need you. Turns out they need him more now than they did when they put him on IR. You know, like there's part of me that wonders if they're regretting that decision at all, if they might have needed him, you know, last week. But just specific to this week, him not practicing yesterday scares me, you know, that he's not going to play based on D'Amico laying out pretty clearly what his philosophy is with these guys, that he errs to the side of conservative. And they have to practice throughout the week. And so if Nico and Will don't practice today, I think it's curtains for Sunday. I don't think they're playing on Sunday.
Yeah, I think with Nico, my one thought was, okay, is it gamesmanship? I don't think you mess with gamesmanship when it comes to reintegrating the one thing that you know for sure right now would be a boost to your offense. Yes. For all of the issues with pass protection and anything else, you know, CJ's newfound inaccuracy, all of that. A lot of it gets smoothed over to an extreme degree with the presence of Nico Collins. So I don't think gamesmanship, and when you know especially that the Lions are definitely planning for Nico Collins, that's their biggest threat,
yeah.
Is that they got a plan for Nico Collins. That's the biggest thing that could undo them. Yeah, I think that he's probably not going to play on Sunday.
Yeah.
If we don't see him today, I think for sure. Because the hamstring, you want to be sure that a guy's feeling good for a while.
Yes.
You know, that it's going to stick, that we're not going to go out and have another setback that's, you know, where guy comes back for one or two games and then misses another three games. I think there's a better chance that Will Anderson plays this week than Nico Collins.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what to think about Will, just because, you know, we don't have any intel on this ankle injury specifically, Seth. The only thing we know is he's dealt with ankle injuries before.
Right, which is the blessing and the curse is obviously, the curse is that, yeah, he might have chronic ankle issues. Yeah. The blessing is that once you have chronic ankle issues, sometimes it gets re-aggravated really easily, but yeah. Then it goes away real quickly, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with Will, I could see them more following, this is a recurring ankle thing, and we know that you can play through it to a certain degree and that it might heal real quickly, but we'll take it easy on Wednesday and Thursday,
yeah.
And we don't need to get you back into game shape or anything. You can play as long as we can spatch you up real good on Sunday.
Now, again, keep in mind, this was an ankle injury that he suffered because Neville Hewitt rolled over his ankle. Like that, yeah. You know, so this wasn't something where he's starting to feel pain in the ankle again. So, whatever force it was that Neville Hewitt rolled over it with, does it create a more adverse situation than it was just sort of a nagging ankle thing? You know,
but it was one of those things where it wasn't such an extreme situation that you could say, oh, anybody would have sprained their ankle there.
Yeah.
That's why I worry about the chronic part of it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, anytime he gets in a situation like that, is he going to be spraining his ankle?
Yeah.
And look, Steph Curry, as we've talked about, Steph Curry is a guy that started off his career with chronic ankle issues, figured it out. Never developed as a pass rusher, but became a very good basketball player.
Right. No, he turned into an excellent three-point shooter.
But he can't rush from a wide nine for crap.
No.
I know this.
No.
I know this.
Yeah.
No. This is something that, man, with Will Anderson, it's become very much the, wow, boy, he was starting to play at an MVP caliber.
He's number two on the odds board for defensive player of the year.
Yeah, yeah. And
player
of
the month.
There you go with another ankle injury.
Yeah,
can
man.
We trust that he's going to be healthy for the rest of the season in the playoffs?
Yeah, yeah. This Nico thing is troubling if he doesn't play. Like, it's really funny. Like, the Texans are 3.5-point underdogs right now. And I don't know how Nico is baked into that line. Like, I don't know how the odds makers or the market is looking at it.
Yeah.
It was 3.5 yesterday. Nico didn't practice. It's still 3.5 today. Conventional betting nuance is that the only guys that move a line significantly, if at all, are quarterbacks and their availability. There is the rare non-quarterback that can move a line a half point, a full point, you know, like at his peak. You know, Gronk might have moved a line a half a point or a point because he's such a cheat code at tight end. You know, like Adrian Peterson, guys like that.
Well, yeah, and he affected defenses so much in the way they played.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He put the defenses into personnel crunches.
So guys like that. Now, is he a guy like that? For the Texans, he might be, for where the Texans are right now. And that's why where I look at this and I'm like, man, if Nico doesn't play and I didn't have an emotional attachment to this game, I would empty the chamber on the Lions. I think the Texans are going to have an awfully hard time moving the football if they don't have Nico Collins out there. If you think that the Texans are going to be able to move the football without Nico Collins, that is an inordinate amount of trust in Bobby Slowick as an offensive coordinator.
And going to the other side of the ball, too, without being able to have Will Anderson to put pressure on the quarterback and the speed that they have with Jameson Williams returning, the Texans' ability to play really good defense and then let up huge plays in the passing game makes me really nervous in this game. The defense is going to be tested to an extreme degree against a team that's firing on all cylinders offensively. Jared freaking Goff has now set a record for the highest passer rating over a six-game span in NFL history.
He's got more touchdown passes and incompletions over a decent chunk of time here.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think you could argue that And we're talking about Nico Collins and Will Anderson and their injuries right now. If you're just tuning in, neither practiced yesterday. Practice starts here in the next few hours. We'll see if either of them practice today. You could argue that these are their two most valuable non-quarterback players. Like, yeah. These are the two guys that move the needle the most for them. Clearly, Nico moves the needle the most for them offensively because Joe Mixon's run the ball phenomenally every game he's been in there this year. The last three games, Joe Mixon is first in the NFL in a lot of run categories, a lot of them in terms of yards after contact and broken tackles, first down runs, chunk runs. Joe Mixon is first or second in the NFL over the last three games in a ton of categories. They're 1-2 in those games, and they can't take advantage of what Joe Mixon is bringing. Like, you and I have been talking for 2 years now, Seth, about, well, if they get a run game going, that's how you really unleash this explosive passing game. Well, Joe Mixon's been back for a few games now, and C.J. Stroud has had a few of his worst games as a passer.
Right. That's right. They're doing nothing to take advantage of having that. Yeah, Joe Mixon is first in yards after contact over the last 3 weeks, first in rushing touchdowns, first in first downs, second in forced missed tackles, first in 12 runs of 10 plus yards. He's been operating at a high level, and
the offense stinks.
They don't use it to spark anything at all.
So that leads me to the conclusion, like, Nico is their most valuable offensive player. I get it, CJ's in a different category. Nico's their most valuable offensive player. Will Anderson, for all the points you've made about why they struggled in, who'd they just lose to? The Jets. Because Will's not out there. Nobody's commanding double teams. You know, tight ends are able to run out in routes, and now Aaron Rodgers has four or five guys he can target instead of three guys he can target. These are your two most valuable guys, and we are 3 hours away from learning that they're probably not going to play if they don't practice today.
If they don't practice,
that is a scary, scary thing. 3.5, because like 3.5 starts to look real small to me as a spread on this game if these two guys don't play.
I was having an eerie feeling over the course of the first half of the season where every day we were coming in, even after victories, and saying, okay, well, that's cool that they won, but man, they gotta fix some of this stuff. It felt like, as somebody who was living in Florida in 2007 and 2008, when you were looking around at the housing market and you're like, all right, well, something doesn't make sense here because nobody's buying these houses at these prices. Like, wait a second. But meanwhile, everything's rip-roaring. Hey, all real estate is local, all of this. And you're like, all right, well, something's off. That's what it felt like. And then ultimately everybody else caught up and figured it out. The housing market was a complete sham. I felt all again in the first half of the season like I was living in Florida with too heavily invested in real estate.
That analogy speaks to me, man. That is a good analogy right there. The Texans right now, the 2024 Texans are the Florida housing market of 2007 and 2008. We hope not. And that's the other thing. So this fear of Nico and Will not being in there. Now, I will say this, because the Texans still have plenty of good players on the team. They still have a good quarterback. I think DeMeco Ryans is a good head coach. I'm not sure where Bobby Slowik is right now as an OC, but I will say this. All of the clouds that are hovering over this team right now that I think this team is seeing and hearing, I think that's very evident in some of the answers that DeMeco Ryans had yesterday, that C.J. Stroud had yesterday. I'm not saying it's unjustified to be skittish about this team right now. I'm just saying it exists. This is an opportunity, especially if they don't have Nico Collins and Will Anderson. Don't give a crap how they win this game, man. I don't care how they win it with Nico and Will, to be truthful. But if DeMeco Ryans is able to go find a way, you know, win the turnover margin by three or four, go get some plays on special teams, get some of that invisible yardage, fix some of the things on the offensive line and just be average up there. Like, these are all things that are doable for this football team. If you're able to do that, man, that is like a smart bomb, man, that just eradicates the negativity around this team right now at 6-3. Like, if you go win this Lions game, and especially if you do it undermanned without Nico Collins and without Will Anderson, I don't care how you do it, you're 7-3 and you just pulled off that win, man, we are right back to how I felt about this team coming into the season again.
This is the moment where we find out whether or not the Houston Texans are in fact Bear Stearns. And don't be Bear Stearns. Don't, D'Amico, don't let this be the Bear Stearns moment, okay?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yes.
Where it just collapses. And you're not too big to fail, okay? The first one never is. The ensuing ones will be, but do not. Whatever they could have done at Bear Stearns to avoid becoming Bear right. Stearns, stop. Don't do it.
Good pep talk. Yes. don't be Bear Stearns.
Be Bear Bryant, not Bear Stearns.
Look at that. Look at you. Oh, my God.
That's a Scott Boras
line. I was just
right going
to say Boras would be so proud of you right now.
Yeah. Hold on. I got to write it down. Bear Bryant. Be Bear Bryant, not Bear Stearns.
I like okay. that, man. I like that. 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. When is the offense going to stop being ass? That's a text right now. That's a very straightforward text.
Why doesn't somebody have the balls to ask that question? They really did. They really did. They've asked multiple times, hey, when is the offense going to stop being ass?
Yeah.
And usually the standard response from D'Amico is going to be, well, when they start executing, then they'll stop being ass.
Yep.
To paraphrase D'Amico, that's what he said.
Yep, yep. Let's see. If the coaches just listened to 610 to y'all's show End of the Drive, they'd have all their issues solved. LOL. I don't know that that's the case.
The thing is, they know what the issues are.
Correct.
That's the problem. Yeah, they already know what the issues are. We all know what the issues are. It's a matter of going out and fixing it. The problem is, okay, I don't know if Bobby Slowick is the guy that's the one that can make those changes and fix those fixes.
Yeah, someone's saying on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, I bet Mike Tomlin could win this game. I think D'Amico Ryans can win this game. Like, I think the Texans can win the game. I'm just not supremely confident that they will win the game. They're going to need some things to happen, and they're going to need whatever the best version of their defense has been throughout this season, and they've been very, very good. That's the version that needs to show up on Sunday.
You know what you have to do, Sean?
What do I need to do?
I command you, keep that same energy if they do win the game.
You know I will.
Keep that same energy.
I absolutely will.
I won't. Yeah. Only because one person said keep that same energy to me already. And I have a strict policy. I will never keep that same energy if you're commanding me to keep that same energy.
Don't tell me what to do. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. J.J. Watt was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. He had some interesting things to say about the trade deadline, about his history with the trade deadline. I want to go through this, actually, a little bit and dive in. Did J.J. Watt have to march into Jack Easterby's office at some point? I'll explain. And also, he talked about D-Hop playing in Kansas City, which I thought was really cool. You're going to want to hear that. That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday making his weekly visit. After skewering him for several minutes over his disrespect to the New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers, they got into some pretty good topics on that show. Here was J.J. Watt on handling the trade rumors while he was a player.
There's times where literally I saw my name float around if we weren't playing that well and the trade deadline would come up and like I see the Twitter reports and all of a sudden I like text my agent. I'm like, yo, I'm not like moving, am I? Like or what are we? And literally I have no idea. Or I'll go up to the GM and I'll be like, hey, like you're not calling people, right? Or are you? Or what's going on?
Yeah, you'll not so reach your face. No.
Yeah, no, you don't know as much as fans think you know. Like, they think they're like, oh, yeah, he knows he's gone or he's at, like, there's a lot of times where you have literally no idea what's going on upstairs. There was one year where I was like, I had to go up there a couple days in a row. I was like, you're sure, right? Like, I see it a lot.
Never.
A lot.
Okay. There was one year in particular. So this is where I hear that. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, we could probably figure out, based on JJ's career, exactly what year that might have been where he had to go do that, you know?
This is why I always, always, always endorse that your GM be a serial philanderer. We need somebody that's really good at lying to people's faces.
Yeah.
And make them feel... I'm joking about the serial philanderer part, but there is an element to that. The uncomfortable moments where coaches or GMs have to lie.
Yeah.
Or coach speak or GM speak.
Right.
It's gotta be tough when a player comes to you and asks, and you can't let that person know. that you're definitely talking about them to other people.
Right, right, right. Well, especially when it's
baby,
James.
No, I'm just, those are just my friends on Instagram.
Especially
you
when,
can look at it anytime you want.
Especially
not that phone, this phone, this phone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, that one.
That's that's my work phone. You
right.
can't touch that one. Yeah.
Well, especially when you're a Texan fan and it's JJ Watt and you're like, "Man, was there cuz his career was 9 years with the Texans. No, 10 years with the Texans. And then 2 seasons with the Arizona Cardinals. He played 12 years total. And I'm like, okay. I mean, he's talking about a conversation that clearly he remembers taking place with him and the general manager. So I'm like, when could that possibly have happened with either of the teams? And so I went through and I'm like, all right, well, there's no way that happened during his reign of terror as 3-time defensive player of the year. Like, there's no chance mm-hmm. they were trading him then. He was injured. So that was 2011 through 2015. No chance. 0% chance. 2016, he was injured in week 3. 2017, he was injured in week 5. No chance it was either of those years. 2018 and 2019, when he returned healthy, they were a playoff team. You know, they were a good team those seasons.
Yeah.
So they're not trade. They would be a buyer. They were a buyer in 2018. They traded for Demaryius Thomas that year. And then in 2019, they were a potential playoff team again. And then he tore the pectoral muscle and his regular season was over. The only logical trade season for J.J. Watt as a Texan would have been the COVID year in 2020 when it was very evident right out of the chute they were a terrible football team.
Yeah.
They fired Bill O'Brien, head coach and GM, 4 games into the season. And if we recall, Romeo Crennel became the interim coach and Jack Easterby became the interim GM. So is it possible that J.J. Watt had to march into Jack Easterby's office multiple times and ask him, "Hey, man, am I up on the trade block right now?"
I think there's a good chance that happened that season.
Yeah.
I don't know at that point whether J.J. maybe would have been cool with it or not.
Right.
Depending
on where he would go to, right?
Right. Yeah, it's like maybe he just wanted to be clued in on it and, you know, be a part of the process.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the most likely instance.
Now,
O'Brien, I feel like O'Brien might have wanted to trade J.J. at some point earlier than that. It just, there was, I wouldn't have, I don't know. But,
well, they did, as McAfee pointed out yesterday, they did almost, or did get into fights at times, O'Brien and J.J.
J.J.
Watt.
And O'Brien, right, yeah. In that 2020 season, right?
Yeah, the Steelers
before,
game.
Yeah. So when in that whole offseason leading up to that, where, you know, Bill O'Brien was kind of running amok they were willing to trade DeAndre Hopkins away for just about nothing. They had already done it with Jadeveon Clowney. Those guys are different than, obviously, they're different than J.J. in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I think O'Brien was in take no prisoners mode, and I would be really surprised if O'Brien didn't field calls about J.J. Watt. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, he would have been maybe more open to it than he or Rick Smith or Brian Gain would have been in the past.
They couldn't you see like a sequence where he trades the 2 first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil and then he might be shopping J.J. Watt and try to get 2 first-round picks for him before 2019?
Yeah, he thought he was going to be able to recoup some of that or something.
People might be shaking their heads in the car, and if you are, that means you just moved here in the last few years and didn't experience the Bill O'Brien as GM era. I could totally see Bill O'Brien trading 2 firsts and a second for Laremy Tunsil and then whipping around and trading J.J. Watt. Why? Because 6 months later, he traded DeAndre Hopkins for a second-round pick. Now, that would have been the thing. He trades J.J. Watt for a second-round pick in a janky-ass running back contract.
Well, the thing with J.J. Watt that was always going to be dicey, whether you're Bill O'Brien or anybody else, was, yes, J.J. Watt's incredible when he's healthy, but how much – if there's another team out there – that was willing to take on all that salary and the injury risk, there's a reasonable, I think there's a reasonable price there. I don't think it would be completely out of whack for O'Brien to consider it.
No, in retrospect, it might have been a good move at the time.
Right,
he tore a pectoral muscle that year, and then 2020, he only had 5 or 6 sacks. The only other season it could have been for J.J., where he walked in and saw the GM and asked about it, would be his last season in Arizona. They were a playoff team his first year in Arizona. His last year in Arizona, they were bad. I could see Steve Keim like going, there might be teams calling us about J.J. Watt.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even forget about the Arizona days.
That may have been it. It's more fun to think about J.J. walking into Jack Easterby's office and asking about it, just based on the duplicitous answers he might get in the process.
Yeah, yeah.
But so there you go. Hey,
yeah, or just, yeah, like the physical threatening maybe. Hey, JJ, did you ever just point blank physically threaten Jack Easterby? Did you ever get that frustrated with him that you did that?
Yeah. That's fun to think about too. JJ
would be too smart to actually explicitly threaten him, but he might make a menacing
stare,
look or gesture or something. Yeah.
Yeah. JJ said that he was actually texting with DeAndre Hopkins, one of the more prominent trade deadline pickups. He said, I was texting with D-Hop after the game on Monday.
I was texting with Hop yesterday a little bit. It's fun for me to see him playing with Mahomes. Like, I haven't been with Hop for his whole career, and knowing how many quarterbacks he's been with and some of those teams that we were on, it's a lot of fun to see him out there balling out and playing so well. And it's also one of those where I know everybody's sitting there looking like, how did we let this happen?
Yeah, that last part's the big thing, man. People have to be, I know I was as a Texan fan, like, of all the teams to go get DeAndre Hopkins, and unlike some of these other receivers that are aging and have been traded either at the deadline or before the season, you know, like Keenan Allen, everybody's making a big deal about Keenan Allen going to Chicago. Like, okay, well, that hasn't really done much there. You know, like DeAndre Hopkins statistically had not been great the last couple of years, but based on the early returns, the old, at least some version of the old DeAndre Hopkins unleashed in that offense,
right,
might still exist.
Well, he hasn't had really a quarterback that can, you know, deliver the 50-50 ball to him. The 50-50 ball that becomes a 95-5 ball when thrown to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep.
It's not quite there. And then I think with the thing that'll be interesting with Mahomes is that I don't think Mahomes doesn't need precision route running by his receivers for Mahomes to find them. When it comes to the scramble drill or whatever else, I think, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is not a conventionally great route runner. He's just really good at getting open enough for him to make the catch. And so he doesn't always do the conventional route running stuff, and it's not on time and in rhythm the same way that maybe like some quarterbacks would require. Pat Mahomes doesn't have to worry about that. I think Pat Mahomes can just create that relationship with DeAndre.
Yeah.
And figure it out. So, I think it was a really smart move by Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. For a fifth, it could become a fourth. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, look at Brock Osweiler was the worst example of a guy that didn't know how to use DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, no.
DeAndre Hopkins made every quarterback he played with better than they actually were.
Yeah.
Except for Brock Osweiler, who couldn't seem to figure out how to just throw the ball up in the air to DeAndre
Laser, Hopkins. Yeah. Why, Brock?
That's a good question. Why, Brock?
That's a good question, Andre. Really good question. 5 Hour Energy fan line, text message. Good morning, Sean and Seth. My gut feeling tells me the Lions are going to massacre the Texans, and I'm a Texan fan. I'm hoping and praying for the best. Great show as always. God bless.
You know, the whole thing is,
he's going to get massacred, and God bless.
Man, I'll tell you, the optics of it are that the last two times Kenyon Green has been replaced, the team drove down on a scoring drive the very next series.
Yes, yes.
With Jared Patterson and Kendrick Green.
And Kendrick Green. They on the very first series, which game did he get swapped out? The Indianapolis game.
Yeah.
Is when Jared Patterson came in, and they came in and they had a 10-play, 70-yard drive. Joe Mixon had that get-off-me run at the end.
Yeah.
And that's the play Patterson got hurt on. And then, yeah, Kendrick Green, they had a 98-yard drive.
Yeah.
With Kendrick Green at left guard.
And Kendrick had some really bad pass protection snaps in the game versus really good defensive tackles, but still, it's the getting beat quick that's the scary part. And that's one thing where that's one thing to get beat in pass protection, but there's too many times on the interior where it's, oh no, this guy is winning quick,
dude,
and getting right up on the quarterback. It's like having a close talker in your face with bad breath.
Yeah, there was a play Joe Mixon had that made it onto Twitter, you know, like an all 22 play. It was a run. It wasn't a pass.
Yeah, and it was Kenyon Green getting just blasted.
He got shoved to the ground. Shoved to the ground. He got swim moved to the ground, like face first to the ground, a tenth of a second into the play. It was like he was a fan that got to play left guard for a play. You know what I mean? Like, it was It was that, and Joe Mixon still was able to bounce it outside for about 12 yards. You know,
some of those deep, deep penetration plays by Kenyon Green, Joe Mixon has turned into a positive by like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to make my cut really early,
yeah,
and get really fast,
flying by me,
yeah.
That's wild,
but it makes it easier when you get an offensive lineman getting driven that far back into the backfield. It makes it so much easier for the linebackers to know where the play is going to go. So the cutback. The running back has to make the decision immediately. The linebackers and the safeties can adjust, and you lose all that value of the zone run.
Yep.
And Mixon's still been able to make something out of a lot of those plays, but it's just such a glaring issue at left guard that anybody is going to be better than what they were getting. Now, is it good enough to make them a genuinely really good offense? We'll see. But I think there will be improvement just by that replacement.
Dude.
And that goes back on D'Amico, Casario, yep. Slowick.
Everybody.
Not when if Jarrett Patterson gets in there and plays passably well.
Yeah.
If he puts in an average performance, even slightly below average by left guard standards, they're going to be a much better offense. And then it all comes back on, like, why? Why did you not see this sooner?
Seth, we are beaten over the head with just a play here and a play there, and we're this close and blah, blah, blah. Kenyon Green has like a dozen snaps a game that are catastrophically bad. If right. Jarrett Patterson just doesn't mess up those plays, mm-hmm. this offense could be a whole lot better on Sunday.
You know what? You know, I'm glad you framed it that way because that's been the frustrating part when they say it's a play here, it's a play there. Right. Okay, well, let's look and see who's responsible for a huge percentage of those, and let's see if we can fix that immediately.
Yes.
Can we fix the 20% of the issues that are causing 80% of our problems?
There you go.
You know, like, and that's where it feels like they weren't seeing the forest for the trees there.
Well put. Let's stick with Joe Mixon. C.J. Stroud had a really cool thing he said about Joe Mixon and his presence yesterday and why Joe Mixon has amazing numbers the last three games and why I am so angry about it. I will tell you coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Football Friday tomorrow. We'll be ready to go. Sunday, 7:20 kick. Texans and Lions Sunday Night Football. Should be fun. Here was C.J. Stroud yesterday talking about Joe Mixon's leadership and presence in the locker room.
Yeah, I expected that. You know, I met Joe, you know, last year when we played him, and, you know, he had that dog mentality, you know, and, you know, he brought it here, you know, and that's something we needed for sure. You know, we needed. And one thing I love about Joe will call you out. Like Joe will call me out. Joe will call his linemen out. Joe will call, you know, coaches out. He don't care, you know, and ultimately that's what you want because, you know, at the end of the day, like, we all came here for one common goal, and that's to win. And so, you know, if that's hurting somebody's feelings, you know, we grown men. We get paid to do this. So, you know, you got to be able to, you know, understand it, you know, take it for love because he really just cares about the game, you know. So, and he cares about his teams and his coaches. So, yeah, I love Joe.
So he's not afraid to speak his mind. I know that Joe Mixon tweeted something political over the last couple days or posted something, and I have zero clue which side of the aisle he landed on, but I just know that some people aren't happy about it. I don't want to know. Don't tell me, Sean.
You didn't see it, I didn't see it.
Oh, I don't know. Like, I see that. Like, I try to keep it all out. I don't want to. I generally, you know, like, if an athlete says something political outright or whatever and he wants to say it, fine. I just try to keep it separate. I try to keep church and state separate. I try to keep football and politics separate.
This is the first
as much as I can.
This is the first I'm hearing of it. So yeah.
So, but Joe Mixon is that kind of guy, and like it's like anything. This is what I tell the young people. Sean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like whenever you feel a certain way about your own political belief, just remember that there's somebody who died for their country who has the exact opposite political belief.
Right.
So yeah. I don't. Whatever I feel politically. I got to always remember, like, I'm not going to be calling, like, anybody who believes opposite of me is a dirtbag who hates America.
Well,
like,
There's a lot of that going on yesterday.
Yeah, well, there's a service person that died for the country who had the exact opposite political beliefs as me.
Right.
So, like, I'm not going to act like that guy is a dirtbag moron because he differs from me politically.
Yeah.
I'm the same way with my football players or anybody that if they make delicious bakery items or
anybody.
If they're going to sell me a phone, anything. I don't care.
I
don't care. Okay, you can have our differences.
Yes.
So I don't know what Joe Mixon's political beliefs are, and it changes nothing about my opinion about him as a football player.
At all. call. And I like that he calls out his linemen. You know, I was thinking about it. CJ was talking about that. You know, he's not afraid to call out the coaches or the linemen or other players or whatever.
Yeah.
And as the Texans were compared quite a bit this preseason to that Bengals team that Joe Mixon was on that made it to the Super Bowl that year,
yeah,
that was a Bengals team, Seth, that had a really bad offensive line. Like, remember that? Remember how much Joe Burrow would get sacked? And they made it to the Super Bowl. Like, he got sacked, like, they beat the Titans in the playoffs that year, and he got sacked, like, seven times in that playoff. Now, some of it's on Joe Burrow. I just, yeah. I'm curious, as CJ was laying that out, I'm like, man, I wonder how much that comp holds up with Joe Mixon. Watching this offensive line play, doing or at least allowing a lot of the same things to happen to CJ that were happening to Joe Burrow that year, like, it was sustainable enough for them to get to within 3 points of winning the Super Bowl against the Rams that year. Like, I just wonder in Mixon's mind if he looks at this team and the comp holds up, or he looks at this team and says, no, this ain't happening with this team.
I think part of it with that Bengals offensive line, again, we talk about how quickly guys get beat up front at times on the interior. I wonder how bad the offensive line play as a whole was compared to what the Texans have been doing this year. Because, I mean, some of the things that even should help out the offensive line, like the play action. The problem with play action is that you got to take deep drops, too. And, man, you might have seven guys in blocking, but if one of those guys gets destroyed immediately, then you've got a quarterback who had his back turned to the line of scrimmage. He's on a deep, long developing play, and he's turning around and there's somebody in his face.
That's right.
Because even with seven and nobody to throw to, because you've only got two guys out on routes.
Yep.
You know, and that's what it feels like right now, is that there's almost no scheme you can run that you feel good about because of the prospect of the quarterback getting hit so quickly and so immediately.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the parallels would be other than, yeah, he's been through this before where poor pass protection or the quarterback not handling the poor pass protection well, it can do a team in.
Yeah, we've had a few people text in that, hey, you know, teams, there's been plenty of texts about, no, teams have figured out Bobby Slowik. Okay. The texters that have gone into a little more detail on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans, have said that teams are content letting Mixon go get 110 yards.
Right.
If it means they can, because we saw the Texans use a similar strategy. I always think back to that, the Colts game in week 18 last year, where Jonathan Taylor ran wild in that game. But they were perfectly content putting the game in the hands, when ultimately they had to convert third downs or really move the ball down the field, they put the game in the hands of Gardner Minshew. You know, like, okay, Taylor's going to get his buck 40 or whatever it is. And I think there is something to that, especially as depleted as the Texans are at wide receiver right now. Like, all right, well, if Joe Mixon gets some chunk plays where he runs for, you know, he ends up running for a buck 20, but we're sacking C.J. Stroud seven times on the plays where they can't run it every play. They've got to drop back to pass at some point. Then we're going to be just fine, because as you pointed out earlier this week, like, a sack is a drive killer. Like, when we were talking about that with Ross Tucker earlier this week, like, no, the percentage of drives that end up successful that involve being significantly behind the chains is very, very low. And that's why when I look at the numbers, you recited these numbers before about Mixon over the last 3 weeks, and I'll recite them again for those who missed it. First in the league in yards after contact over the last 3 weeks. First, tied for first in rushing touchdowns. Tied for first in first down runs. It's second in missed tackles forced. Tied for first in runs of more than 10 yards. Like, we've been sitting here for a year and a half saying, boy, if they could just get the run game going. They've got the run game going, and they're losing two out of three. They look horrible offensively.
No, and I think, you know, what backs that up is, okay, even with all of the condensed formations that the Texans use and everything, Joe Mixon has faced eight men in the box the 19th highest rate. So teams are not loading up the box to try to stop the run. They're okay giving up some yardage here and there, knowing that ultimately, like what happened in the Jets game, you get down in the red zone, all of a sudden they can't run the ball.
Yeah.
At some point, okay, they're running the ball well, but CJ Stroud's going to complete 35% of his passes.
Yeah.
They're 100. Mixon's playing very, very well, but teams are not pulling out all the stops to try to limit it.
That's
they can live with what Mixon is getting.
Dude, did you know that the two safeties for this team have 10 interceptions?
Yeah.
Combined?
Now, one of those, Kirby Joseph at least has one by a classic Jordan Love interception where he threw it directly to him.
Yeah, this is a pick six. Range. Right.
Yeah, for a pick six. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an opportunistic safety group. And they're violent, too. Branch got ejected from the game last week after he hit a receiver, got charged with targeting. And,
yeah.
And it was a delayed ejection.
It was.
I haven't followed up on exactly. Was there a secondary? Did he get flagged again, like a second time for saying something to an official?
I don't think so. I think they conferred. I was watching it. I think they conferred about it for a while, and they ended up ejecting him because he had walked away from the play, and then he's kind of finding out he got ejected, and he comes back over like, what the hell is going on? That was the play that Florio got all uptight about Brady complaining about. That was Tom Brady was doing that game, and he really thought that Brian Branch got screwed on that ejection, and Florio's like, according to my clipboard here, it looks as though you were in violation of bylaws 5AC.2 and 48D.3, Tom, and that is complaining about the officials.
I don't know if Florio is a golf fan or not, but he 100%. They don't have it anymore, but the PGA 100%. Hotline where fans used to be able to call in. Florio, if he was a golf fan, was probably saw his number like, oh great,
he had it on speed dial. You know, he had it as one of his speed.
Yeah.
He had the fire department, the police department, and the PGA rules infraction. Those were his three emergency numbers.
He picked up his ball. I saw it. He picked up his ball.
He's just hitting it all of a sudden.
He's like the 119th ranked golfer in the world.
Yep.
What are you doing? He's
without rules, there are anarchy. It's anarchy. I tell you.
He got cut that round anyway. Yeah, but we got to win for it without rules.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's beautiful. All right, Dan Campbell has me fired up for this game. The opposing head coach has me. If I were a Texan listening to Dan Campbell, I think Dan Campbell inadvertently might fire up everybody for this game. We'll have that for you coming up next.